Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione. And how are you?
Doing good, Russ. How are you?
Well, we just watched the Tampa Bay Lightning dominate until they didn't, and hold on for dear life at the end
of a
very important game. The interesting thing about it is, if there is a team right now in the Stanley Cup Finals that you don't want to go up 4-0 against, it's the Pittsburgh Penguins, because they're the one team that could actually come back.
No, they got the firepower throughout their lives, no question about that. And kind of the scary thing was to finally see Evgeny Malkin finally really cut loose in this game and uncork one. And to me, that's one of the things you have to look at with him if he gets loose. And again, such a loose third period for Tampa, and it doesn't give me a ton of confidence here. Even though the series is 2-2, it's now, you know, going back to Pittsburgh, this is going to get real dicey real quick if Tampa doesn't do what's necessary here to really sort of batten down the hatches, especially in the third.
Totally agree. All right, well, we're going to pan this conversation for just a moment, and I'm sure our guest will have something to say about it. And we've got CSN's own Chuck Gormley on the line. Chuck, how are you?
Hey, guys. Good. How are you?
Good. Appreciate
doing well,
you coming
Chuck.
On. Yeah, we've known you for a long time, and we both respect your work a lot, and I imagine you had an interesting time trying to fend off all the Ovechkin haters at the end of the season now, because anytime the Washington Capitals don't advance in the playoffs, it's Ovechkin's fault, right?
You know what's funny is usually the fans in the home city are the ones who get all over the athletes, but in this case, it's always the national writers or media types who get all over Alex Ovechkin, and everyone in Washington wants to defend him. So I have to say that I have to defend him, because I've covered Alex Ovechkin for 5 years now, and he is a much better player now than he was 5 years ago. He plays both ends of the rink. He did everything in that series but win, and that's ultimately how he's going to be judged. I was joking. Actually, I wasn't joking. I actually wrote a story saying that if he's not careful, he's going to be the Dan Marino and Charles Barkley of hockey, because he's that superstar who hasn't won it, and it's not all his fault. I mean, sometimes you can lay it on the player, and sometimes you have to lay it on management. Sometimes you have to lay it on, look at Eric Lindros. I mean, he never had that goaltender. And I draw some comparisons to those two players, because I think that Alex has not had the right pieces around him, and I think Eric Lindros never had the right pieces around him.
Well, you know, just to follow that up, in this era, and I think this is the difference too, it's like, you know, everybody looks at, well, you know, Ray Bourque got his cup even though he got it somewhere else, and, you know, this guy got his cup and that guy got his cup. But, yeah, this wasn't the cap era, you know. Ovechkin can only do so much, and because of how good he is, he makes X amount of money, which counts against, you know, let's say 12-15% against the cap. And you could only build so much around him. And so now, to me, in this era, we're going to see a lot of guys like Ovechkin that are great players that are not going to win the cup, but it's because it's the system. Like, teams can't just buy whoever they want anymore.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a good point, because those superstar players, like Steven Stamkos is one of them. You know, you can only get so many of those players around the league. And, you know, unless you have two of them, unless you're bad enough to be bad for two straight years, maybe 3 years, and you can stock up on those guys, your window is small, because it's hard to keep those players. You can keep a guy like Malkin and Crosby, but how much money do you have to get the players around them? And that's why, you know, in a series like the one we're watching, you know, Nick Bonino has to be a really good player, because teams can neutralize each other. I mean, that's what happened in the last series with Washington and Pittsburgh. Really, the Capitals did a nice job on Malkin and on Crosby. I think they had one goal between them, but a guy like Nick Bonino ends up winning the series for them.
It's interesting you mentioned that. I watching Bonino and Kessel and Hagelin, I'm almost getting a little bit of a flashback to 2010 with Briere, Leno, and Hartnell and the kind of tear that they were on for the Flyers during that postseason. You get sort of that same kind of feel with that line?
Yeah, I haven't heard Billy Leno's name in a long time.
But, we're dragging them all out.
that guy earned himself a contract with one playoff run, didn't he?
That was
amazing. That's what happens in the playoffs. You see a line get hot, and remember R.J. Umberger got hot against the Montreal Canadiens, and like who would expect that? But, you know, that happens sometimes in a playoff series and then allows a guy like Sidney Crosby to, you know, flourish maybe the following series is exactly what's happening now. So you have to have guys step up, and if you don't, you're not going to win the cup.
No, I mean, I look at it, and Washington's in a unique situation because they're still going to be one of the best teams for the next couple of years, and they have one of the deepest prospect pools. And so when you look at that combination, I felt like people were putting way too much pressure and had too many expectations for Kuznetsov, who's still a kid. And again, you've got Burakovsky, who is starting to show really good flashes in the last series. And so you have guys that haven't peaked out yet. You have guys, and you still, you know, while Hershey, which I'm not sure if you're on the Hershey beat or not, is fighting to maybe get to the Calder Cup, you've got guys like Riley Barber down there. I mean, and so you do have players. And I think at the end of the day, and Madison Bowie, too. I mean, at some point he's going to be an NHLer, too. Mm-hmm. That may be what has to happen is when those guys get there, then they have the team. Remember, Elway was in this position, too. And until the Jets gave him a really good chance and a way to beat him, I'm a Jet fan, Chuck, so it hurts to say it. All of a sudden, Elway became a legend, right? And then all of a sudden, he got that winning in him and then won another one.
Well, that's interesting because the way I look at it, the Capitals have a one-year window with the current roster because they've got 9 forwards, 6 defensemen, 2 goaltenders, all under contract for next year. So with this group, with guys like Justin Williams and TJ Oshie, whose contracts expire after next season, Carl Alsner expires after next season. They've got quite a few guys. If you look 2 years ahead, they only have 3 forwards and I think 4 defensemen and 1 goaltender on their roster. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done after next season. But we talked to the general manager last week, Brian McClellan, and he said, you know, we still have a window for Alex Ovechkin. And yes, it's a one-year window with these players, but that doesn't mean the Capitals can't win beyond next season because, like you said, Kuznetsov is a guy who's coming. Burakovsky is a guy who's coming. We don't know whether Jacob Vrana with Hershey is going to be an NHL player next season. There's a lot of variables, and you don't know where the league's going to go. So I like Alex Ovechkin more than I thought I would, honestly, and I think he will win a cup. It's just – man, there are 29 other teams, and sometimes you don't have the right answer to satisfy fans. I mean, you do everything you can to get the players that you think are going to win the cup for you, and sometimes it just doesn't happen. And sometimes there's not a whole lot of blame to go to one specific area, and it's hard for a GM to build a team.
Yeah. I look at it, and we were talking about Tampa before you came on and how they had to literally hold on against the Penguins, and maybe having a 4-0 lead against the Penguins is the worst team in the playoffs you could have that lead against because they could actually come back. But if you look at the way Tampa is, there's not that much difference between Tampa and the Capitals. There really isn't. And if you're going to say they have the extra goaltending depth, then I'll argue, well, you know, at some point the Capitals will sign Ilya Samsonov out of Russia and they'll have the same kind of goaltending depth. And so I really think they've got almost all the same pieces. Maybe they don't have a monster in Victor Hedman, but that's really the only difference. Otherwise, they're pretty comparable teams, and I think, yeah, it's just matchups. It's like, you know, when you get boxers together, there are some boxers I remember growing up, you know, Ken Norton could beat certain guys, but he couldn't beat other guys. You know, Ali could beat almost everybody, but he would have trouble with Frazier. You know, and these are the kinds of things that happen in hockey too.
And you can't predict your playoff opponent. And that's another thing. I was talking with the GM and the coach of the Capitals about this, and I said, you know, last year the Capitals lost to the Islanders and that I'm sorry, beat the Islanders in seven games mm-hmm. and then lost to the Rangers. And a few of the players said that they couldn't adapt their game from playing a physical style against the Islanders to playing a little more speed game against the Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
And a few players said, we're better built this year to handle that. Well, the exact same thing happened. They played the Flyers in round one, very physical
mm-hmm.
series. A lot of the players said it was cheap, but it was a physical series, and they tried to turn into a speed game, and I think they didn't get there. They didn't get there fast enough. And the one
mm-hmm.
thing with the Penguins is they're a fast team, but they're a fast team because they throw pucks out of the defensive zone and then they outrace teams for that loose puck. And that's where they create their speed. It's not like they're passing the puck up the ice. It's really a flip out and then they go and chase it. And that's why I think you're seeing some entertaining hockey with Tampa, because they're also a very speed team. And I mean, I watched tonight's game and I'm like, man, this is great hockey. Like, even when it was 4-0, I couldn't turn it off.
Right.
Chuck, heading into this offseason, I know you've had some concerns about what the potential depth for the Capitals on the bottom six. Are there any players in this offseason that you would look at potentially in free agency that the Caps would want to take a long look at it, possibly improving that area?
Well, Franz Nielsen is a guy I think a lot of teams would be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I think the Islanders really want to re-sign him. They need to get some speed. And the free agent market, I don't see a whole lot there. I mean, Andrew Ladd is there. And he's won a couple cups, so I could see that as a possibility. Andrew Ladd feels like he's 35, 36, but he's only 32. So
yeah, but Eric Staal's fallen into that pit too, right? I mean, Eric Staal's 31, and he seems to have fallen off the cliff too.
Yeah, I mean, that's some guys, you know, it just seems like there's more wear and tear because they've been in the league since they've been 18. I mean, who would
mm-hmm.
think that, you know, guys... Some guys are 26, like Stamkos is what, 20? How old is Stamkos? 26, 27?
25,
and he's already a free agent.
27, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's a free agent at 26 years old. And you forget that these guys are in the league at 18, and all of a sudden they're free agents at 26. So I don't see anybody out there that's going to make an immediate impact. And you don't really need that. I mean, you just need somebody who can play solid defensively. What I found interesting is that Brian McClellan was saying that this league has become a nine-forward league, that you play
mm-hmm.
those top nine guys so much, and there's so much line matching going on that you need that third line to be solid. Like, and we're seeing it with Pittsburgh. I mean, that third line is probably the best third line in hockey. And even the Islanders with, you know, those heavy hitters that they have, their fourth line is really their third line. So I don't know if there is an easy answer for the Capitals. I wrote this the other day. There's that kid, Chip, he's not a kid really, how do we say it? Chipchinov?
Are
you
talking about Jacob Chikrin,
yeah.
mm-hmm. the giraffe? Who are you talking about?
No.
he's tearing it up in the World Championships. He's what, 30 years old now?
Yeah.
So that's a possibility. I mean, there are Russians.
I'll tell you, there's
Russians.
A guy. There's a guy on France, Damien Fleury, who, I'll tell you, this guy is in on every scoring opportunity. He's in the same league as Bellemare. He basically scores at will in all the leagues that he's played in. He's like a 20-goal scorer, and I think he's 26, 27, 28, maybe 30 at the most. That's a guy I'd sign to an ELC because he's been in on the scoring and made France a lot better. I know what you're saying. The other thing is, what I find interesting about the Caps is I think, and I always felt this, and you could answer to it or not, but I felt like the Richards experiment is a failed experiment, and they need to get that fourth line center because the speed part of the lack of speed hurt them. And now Brooks Orpik, the lack of speed in Brooks Orpik is not going to – I have a feeling he's not going to be an every game defenseman when it comes to the playoffs because the Capitals were faster with Nate Schmidt in there, and they actually were better against certain teams with him. There's still obviously a big spot for Orpik, but when you do play a faster team, Orpik's not going to be a guy you want in there.
I agree with you on both points. I think Mike Richards was a great idea at the time, and I think he brought them a lot of what they wanted. Their penalty kill was outstanding, and he was a big part of that. Daniel Winnick, who they brought in at the trade deadline, was also outstanding on the penalty kill, better than I expected. So I think they had the right idea, and I remember when they were talking about Mike Richards, and this was about 4 weeks before they signed him, and I had asked around about him, and Brian McClellan said, you know, there's a lot of homework that we have to do because I have to talk to my owner, and I have to sell him on this and make sure he understands why we're doing this. And I liked the idea. I mean, I know Mike Richards has some people who like him and some people who don't like him, especially in Philly. And I liked him. I liked what he could bring. He brings in intangibles that I think teams need. And I think they needed that. And they went out and got it. And in the beginning, I thought, boy, he is so slow. I mean, it was so noticeable, and I wondered if he could make it. And then I guess it was about a week left in the season, he started increasing his speed. And I was thinking, what's going on here? I think he was just kind of getting into a groove, and he was finding his legs again. And I thought he looked pretty good in the Philly series. And
he did.
In the Pittsburgh series, there were about four or five chances, like grade A chances. And if he puts them in, everybody's saying it was a great signing, but he didn't.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing I noticed about Mike Richards. His hands have left him. And it's sad to see that because we remember him being such an offensive force.
Yep.
And to see that completely disappear was kind of hard to watch, honestly. And I hope he gets another crack with another team because I think he can play, but he's no better than a fourth line center in my opinion.
Chuck, last question from my end. In terms of the relationship, certainly it's an interesting to see the atmosphere around the Capitals with what Barry Trotz has been able to do within the last couple of years. Being around Barry, coming in obviously from when he started, coming in from Nashville, just your overall impressions of what he's been able to do here in his first couple of seasons as Caps coach.
I've been really impressed. I mean, I heard a lot of good things about Barry Trotz before I got to see him on a daily basis, and he's pretty much exceeded everything that I expected. He's been tremendous. Just from the way he set up what he wanted to do with this team, setting goals for this team, that their goals against average went way down after his first season or during his first season. The way he handles his players. The one knock against him in Nashville is that he wasn't really good with prospects, with giving guys enough time. Philip Forsberg was one of those guys that he wanted to send to the minors, and they did. And then when Barry Trotz left, Philip Forsberg really blossomed. So I think that's still something that to Barry, I think he's definitely a veteran coach. He reminds me a little bit of Ken Hitchcock in that way. And
yeah.
I think he was instrumental in getting Mike Richards. So I see him more as a guy who wants to win now and is not as interested in developing. And, you know, it's a little different animal in Washington because the expectations are much greater in D.C. than they were in Nashville. And I think a coach has to wrap his head around that and realize that the time is short. Like, you have to win. And I think he likes that opportunity, but he's never gotten past the second round of the playoffs. He's
right.
Just like Alex Ovechkin in that respect. And until he does, that question, even though it's not brought up often, has to be addressed.
Yeah, they're going to have to do it together. I'll tell you the last thing, when you talked about the top nine, the first time I heard about somebody mentioning that was on my prospect show on XM. Mark Kelly, who does a fantastic job with the Blackhawks, was the first to say it. And basically he would say that if he had a first pick in the draft, if he felt this player could be in their top nine, he'd draft him. He doesn't care what anybody thinks. He doesn't care that he, you know, could be a number eight overall pick. If he sees a spot for him, he's going to get him. And Ross Mahoney is a similar way. Similar guy, does things in a similar way, has always been great in the draft. And so I feel like you have a guy there that will do that. And so I still think there, you know, there's going to be a year for the Caps. It just wasn't this year.
Yeah, I agree with you. And Ross Mahoney does do a great job. Their draft picks have been excellent. And remember, Phil Forsberg was a Washington Capitals draft pick. And unfortunately, they traded him for Marty Erat, and that just didn't work out.
Ouch.
But,
no.
Yeah, that was a tough one. But, you know, I didn't fully answer that question you asked about Brooks Orpik. And I agree with you again with that. I think Brooks Orpik will be a third pairing defenseman next season. And we're not going to see him in – he's going to be a great penalty killer. But like you said, I think, you know, he's got to be paired with a guy who can really motor. And that will be one way to kind of hide his deficiencies in skating. But he's a warrior, and I actually think a year from now he could go in the expansion draft because his salary is going to be $5.5 million. He'll have 2 years left, and I think he's a great locker room guy. I mean, I know just in talking with him and getting to know him, he's a great. He's kind of reminds me of an old Brad Marsh. Like, he's a great quality guy, and I could see him. In fact, I think Brad Marsh was taken in the expansion draft by Ottawa. But I think he would be a nice fit for a team that wants to, you know, get up to the salary floor and have a guy who can really help these young kids grow.
Yeah, it makes sense. Well, listen, Chuck, we appreciate you taking the time out. We always follow you on Twitter. We are always happy to see you when you come through Philly, and you really do a great job. And, you know, we'll see you in the Cup. It's just going to be a matter of time.
Thanks, guys. I always appreciate coming on.
All right. Take
care. Thanks,
sir. Take care, guys.
All right, Ant. So now let's talk a little bit about the Memorial Cup, and we'll make it Flyer-centric. Obviously, people are going to see Ivan Provorov, and they're going to get pretty excited. And but
not just Provorov, Phil Myers too. Now you got to keep an eye on as well.
True.
That's got a lot. That's now the thing that's really that's the thing that's really got Flyer fans excited right now, as much as anything. Provorov has already had the stage and will continue to do so. But Phil Myers is now the new fair-haired boy.
Yeah, he is, and I remember tweeting about him in camp and really liking him, and management didn't even talk about him in camp, and he had a locker, and I just noticed this guy's locker, and I noticed his play, and I was like, wow, you know, all of a sudden this guy snuck in here, and he literally did. He literally was just signed when he drafted him, and so that was a heck of a signing. Now, I'm not going to say he's going to be a star defenseman, because while he is doing great in juniors, it's still a long road, but he does look like he could play, and so you do have that. What I'm afraid Flyers fans are going to fall into the trap is some of them are going to be watching Brandon for the first time, and they're going to see Nolan Patrick play, and they're going to try and figure out how the Flyers can get Nolan Patrick next year, and he'll be the number one pick. And so,
Well, I mean, they've got to be realistic about that. It's going to be very exciting, but I think also if you've got a level head about yourself, you know just how good Nolan Patrick's going to be. And how good he is already, and what he's going to, how excited people are about him. So I would say, you just kind of, if you're a Flyers fan, you focus in on the guy you have. And then go from there potentially long term. It's a really good Brandon team. I think I think they'll play London in the final. I think,
I think there's a good chance of that. I always tell people, though, I follow the prospects more than the teams. And so, even when I'm covering a Memorial Cup, I get a feel for a team. But there are people that follow them all season long, right? And those are the real experts. So, I get the same feeling you do. But anything could happen in a Mem Cup. Although we all knew Red Deer wasn't going to be good. Like that, I did a show taped in
for tomorrow. They got dismantled pretty good today.
Yeah, and that's not unheard of, and so
no.
we sort of made the argument things had to really break right, but I did talk about Mitch Marner because, look, I knew he could get 4 or 5 points in the game, but Red Deer's not a great team, and my feeling for Marner was don't do any of the no-look passes, don't do the behind-the-back, between-the-leg shots. This is the Memorial Cup. If you're going to go out and get 4 or 5 points, then go out and get 4 or 5 points. If you're going to get 3 or 4 goals, then get 3 or 4 goals because one of those plays in a final can cost you a championship. And so far, so good. And I think that would be the best thing for him because it's easy to have those kinds of games in juniors when you're playing against like sort of like a semi-lousy team. And Red Deer is not a great Memorial Cup team. We know that. But now he's going to be facing some great Memorial Cup teams. And his team is great, too, and they very well may win. But you just have to watch that. When you have that kind of talent, that you don't try and showboat too much.
No, it's important. This is not an all-star game. This is for the championship of Canadian juniors. So you really have to kind of focus in and keep things simple. And I think to Marner's credit again, I know he's got just tremendous hands. I mean, they're just so silky smooth the way he's able to handle the puck. But he seems to be a kid with a really good straight level head. I was reading an article recently about how he was having a rough go, and he almost, he basically said to his father, Dad, I stink. I can't play. He went back with his old coach, and they kind of just did these normal drills just to get things back to where he was originally. I had to find exactly who wrote the piece, but it was really good because it kind of simplified things for him, and he's not dangling. He can, if he wants to, sure, but he's not, he seems to have cut down on those kind of, like, showboating plays and is showing in my mind, just how directed he can be and focused he can be in terms of just being an ice cold killer on the ice when he needs to be.
Yeah, just do that. And I do want to sort of put a word out there. I'm already seeing the words on Twitter like, oh, Olio Levy, he's not having the greatest game. And so now I would put him behind Sergachev and Chychrun, and Shane and I talked about this on the show, and I'm not going to give it all away, but I will say this. It's at the end of the season, and most of the scouts are done with their scouting now. If something amazing happens, you definitely can move up in the rankings. But look, I even saw Robbie Fabry have some bad defensive lapses in the Memorial Cup, and it didn't hurt his draft stock. My feeling is I could have really killed Sergachev in the under-18s because he wasn't fantastic, but then I also knew when I was watching him, it's at the end of the season, and he's playing with a bunch of kids he really didn't know because all of a sudden they had a brand new team. And so there are a lot of things you have to sort of take into account, and that's why you can't do, put one game, so much emphasis on one game and one showing.
No. And I know there's a high obviously there's a high magnification because let's face it, at the end of the day, the majority of people out there aren't watching. These stateside certainly are not necessarily watching Canadian juniors until the Mem Cup broadcasts are on, and everything's going to be magnified, and everybody makes these automatic assumptions about a player. Ulevi, to me, has been right there. It's been between him and Chychrun as the top two guys defensively. And tonight's game isn't going to shake me off of either of those. I can make valid arguments for either of them. With Sergachev, I like as well, but I would not rank him ahead of Ulevi. I'm sorry. I just based on what I've seen. Based on my evaluation, Ulevi. If you want to say Chief, if you want to make some reasons for Chychrun to be ahead of Ulevi, maybe. Yeah, I can see that, but I have a feeling he'll be the one who gets taken ahead of both of those guys when it's time for the draft. And let's not overanalyze a single game.
Yeah, I won't either, and that's pretty much where we're going to leave it. We still have a lot of hockey to go, and we'll be back next week. And that's it for Off the Post. We'll catch everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.
The family member who was concerned. The neighbor who felt uneasy. The teacher who was worried. The coach who noticed at practice. And you. Together, we can tackle child abuse. If you suspect child abuse, visit gov.uk/report child abuse to find out who to call.